Yeah, everyone, this is Tim. Welcome to North and South Podcasts. This is going to be one of our creativity podcasts, and we're going to talk about podcasting, we're going to talk about music, we're going to talk about lots of things. Today I am going to be speaking to Polymath, an all-round good guy, Paul Dargan, who's an old family friend, and it's going to be quite a laid-back ramble chat, as it were, about all kinds of things. So please bear with us. I think there'll be a lot of humour in this one as well. But Paul actually inspired me to do my podcasts and to start it all up, and he's given me a lot of help. And so I wanted to speak to him about his journey to podcasting with the famous Mersey Talk podcast, which we'll talk about in a moment, and also some other little things which he has done, including journalism and music writing, which he's currently doing as a little bit of a sideline as well. Please follow me on Twitter at North Podcasts. Please subscribe and share and spread the word, more the merrier. And also you can contribute financially through coffee.com, and it might just be the price of a cup of coffee to you, but it really, really means a lot to me in chasing my dreams. And I forget who it was, Paul might be able to tell me, as an eminent polymath there, tread lightly because you tread on my dreams. And that's what I want North and South to become, an ever-expanding good thing. And it's all here because of this man I'm about to speak to, Mr. Paul Dargan. Paul, how are you? Would you like to introduce yourself?
Well, where do I begin? I couldn't find the antonym of polymath except for ignoramus, and I'm not ignorant. I'm just... a polymath is someone really who's learned, I suppose, but they're good at stuff. I wouldn't say I'm good at it. I'm just like that annoying fly that you can't get rid of. You know what I mean? So it buzzes when it wants, and then when it's being hit with a mallet, it does nothing. So I'm just trying to... buzz about.
To say. The first thing is, before you introduce yourself further, behind you is loads of CDs on shelves, including Tom Waits. Above your head is a Pink Floyd kind of poster thing. And then either side is some beautiful kind of like modern art. And that's how cultured and how much of a polymath Paul is. You'll probably tell me how it's his dad's or it's not his or whatever. There's also a little guitar on the wall. So this is the kind of guy that we're talking about here. So Paul, you do podcasting, you've been involved in journalism, you've worked for Everton, you do music writing. I think you, like me, are someone who's very creative, who needs quite a few outlets. And although you say that you're like an irritating fly, what drives you, mate? What drives you?
Well, also the second thing I was going to say is that's W.B. Yates.
Yates, is it?
You tread softly.
There you go. There's the polymath. You know these things, you know.
Of night and light and the half light, I would spread the cloths under your feet, but I, being poor, have only my dreams. So there you go.
There you go. And that was from memory, by the way. You didn't just Google that or use a leading search engine.
It's very sad, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It's other search engines are available, yeah. I don't know, you know, when I was young... It was in school, probably. So a lot of people who I've listened to, for example, in taking, you know, some form of inspiration or, a work ethic, if you like, from people who have not always overachieved or achieved or anything, is people who are just, you know, who want to learn and have a quest for knowledge. Mine was in school. We went to the same school, didn't we? We went to Savio, and I don't want to say what the age difference is between us. So I'm just going to say that we both went to the same schools, junior and senior, actually. And there was a... Mr. Fitzpatrick, do you remember English teacher, Mr. Fitzpatrick?
Yeah. Did he inspire you? Because he inspired me.
Absolutely, yeah. I've always loved English, you know, writing and stuff. And I got, I wrote a story called Deja Vu, right, for me GCSE. Yeah. And I got like an A star for it, which I was like, wow, just because it was what I liked, I just wanted it, you know, someone to read what I'd written. So it's what, 13, 14 or something like that. It was coursework, and It was, yeah, it was in what do you call it, year 10 now, don't they? Or I don't know. Probably some part of the Greek alphabet or something. Now it changes every so often. And yeah, so I wrote it. It was like a science fiction piece. And he's, because at that time I was reading books, short story, ghost stories and stuff like that. So that's what it was, a science fiction slash ghost story about the devil that appears in at a New Year's Eve party, but for like, you know, teens, if you like. I forget what the guy's name is, the author. He was very, he was American guy. He done loads, and the other TV program as well. I forgot his name, but it'll come to me anyway. But it was just something that is always really... I mean, I always used to love the Christmas ghost stories, the BBC ones as well, and a lot of them are done by M.R. James, and I still love them now. And I think that it's, you know, those same types of things have resonated with me right through life. And then realizing that you can write if you, you know, you just, you know, if you read a lot, you pick up a lot of information. I've not got a degree. I never went to university. I ended up at went to Pubert College and then ended up at Bootle Football Club, and that was where I started out in journalism as well. I was just doing the Bootle Town's Free Sheets, the Echo, Half Time Reports, dabbled a bit with playing, but it was rubbish. And you know, the same family is still up there, the Dorans, and you know, I speak to them every so often. And when I've been up there, they're sponsoring Bongo's Bingo now and everything. And you know, that some of me, like one of my brothers, was involved in that, and that, like our cousin as well. And so I think it's just the people who I've been fortunate to be around, who've either inspired me, you know, obviously, you know, as you can see, you know, music, and my dad loves poetry, and he's written some poetry himself, actually, so I'm going to get that published for him. And it's those types of things. You know, we love quizzes. It's always wanting to learn things, and a lot, some people, everyone's different, aren't they? Some people want to learn, some people think, they're like a know-all. I've been a football stato or a sports stato, and like, we used to live around the corner from each other, didn't we, in Bootle? Yeah. And where the football pitches are there, I used to look out the window of a Sunday morning when the teams were playing Sunday league sides, and I used to commentate on them, pretending, you know, that they were actual matches. And I used to... That was my dream, was to be a football commentator. That was the 100% aim in my life, was to be a football commentator.
I think, you know, where we come from as well, people sometimes call it like the posher part of Bootle, but I spoke to
Does
my
that
mum
exist?
About, well, I spoke to my mum came up with this like dividing line that used to exist in her mind before I was born, about the more affluent, less affluent parts of Bootle and how it impacted on you. But, you know, I remember your dad, obviously very cultured, big influence on you. My dad, I always grew up with books. When I was young, absolutely, I liked to write in primary school. I went to secondary school and Mr. Fitzpatrick inspired me. And, yeah, you know, I'm a teacher. I always like to think, am I an inspirational type person? And that matters more to me than the quantifiable aspects of life.
Yeah.
There's subtleties and beauty. There's a subtleness and a beauty about life that's kind of just on your shoulder, but never quite in view. And I think that writing and seeing the beauty in things, even like sport. I mean, you're massive on sport. I watched the boxing last night and was thinking of you, thinking, oh, Paul will be watching this, but you said before that you had an early night. But you're kind of into lots of sport. You're into writing a particular style. And you've done a lot of journalism in your youth. And in many ways, I think it's like it's a creative expression on the beauty that's around us, not just in the way, like, I miss the whistles going off on a Saturday and Sunday morning. There used to be a really good team that played over there until very recently. And now you don't hear the whistles and the shouts from that sports field. They're thinking about putting 3G pitches on there now, aren't they? Which,
oh, really? That's good. That's good. Yeah. I know, that's, you know, we... Go on, sorry.
No, there's a bit of a campaign saying, oh, we want the grass, you know, so people can walk the dogs and all that. But I think that that
Sure.
writing, for me, that was there in my youth. And I think you've experienced that as well, that love of the written word. Obviously, ghost stories and those kind of things appeal to you. And then sport. I mean, I've heard your podcasts with boxers and footballers. You know a lot. And obviously, you research and read up about it. I remember your podcast with Clyde Tyldesley was brilliant as well. And although you research for all those podcasts, there's a big passion there for you in the sporting world. And in your podcast, Mersey Talk, which we'll come to up to we'll come to in a minute, you can see there that you're talking to local people about culture. So you're speaking to a horror director on one of yours. You're speaking to comedians who are based in the Merseyside area. You're speaking to singers. You're speaking to people from a few different kind of backgrounds. And do you think that marries up with your kind of big passions, the kind of topics that you've covered on Mersey Talk podcast? And we will put details of that in the notes. And I have shared that in the past. So do you think that that kind of Mersey Talk represents your interests broadly, but not exclusively to, you know, other people wouldn't find them interesting? Like, I'll give you an example. My podcast, politics, creativity, history, well-being, they're my big passions, so I'll focus on them. People might say, oh, I like that one, but like this one or whatever, that's fine. There's a core to your podcast which I think represents what you are, but in a way that's really open to other people.
Yeah,
Is that
I
what you
think
think?
that's a good way of putting it. I agree. I mean, because there's that many different things is that I'm interested in, and I always that my point of doing that podcast was always about getting interesting people. It's nothing to do with me. I'm
Yeah.
just a conduit. That is
Yeah.
all I want to be, is that middleman who just, you know, can get the opportunity to speak to genuinely talented people who are really good in their, you know, arena, if you like, in their industry, but that people might not know. It's like I always used to think, honestly, and I'd say about 20, 25 years ago, I'd go and look on, you know, the listings or something. I've always been a massive fan of comedy, always stand-up comedy in particular. And I always used to look and go, I don't know them. So, and then I just instant, and we're talking when I'm like 15, 16, 17 or whatever. And I'm looking and going, well, they're not on the telly, so they can't be any good. I just dismissed it straight away. And the older I got, I thought, well, no, that's not the point, you know, the case at all. And you know, I suppose that's it. But I like to, and I've been the same right through my life. I'd want to, I don't actively try and make mistakes, but I used to be so impatient that I didn't get, if I didn't get anything right first time, that was it. I'd almost give up. And I think that's what my son has been pretty much like, you know, trying, and where he's trying to, it's not trying to be a perfectionist, but the fact is, if that is if it's something's got to hook him straight away. So if he's not interested straight away, that's it. So I try and recommend loads of different, you know, like TV shows or films and stuff, and he's like, we're not going to like the same thing. So through lockdown, my God, the amount of times we spent together, and obviously there was no footy, there was nothing on. Should we try and watch something? And he's like, well, I'm not joking. We'd be there for like 10 minutes and go, all right, we'll try something else. I'll go to Amazon Prime. I'll go to, you know, I'll use Netflix. I'll use the many different thing, you know, different platforms that are available and stuff. And he's like, I'm not going to like anything you like. And then it turns out, he said, I've been watching, for example, here's a good example for you, Ozark, right? Been telling him to watch Ozark. Oh my God, 2, 3 years, definitely. And he started watching it now, and he's like binge watched it completely. Where I can't do that. I'll watch one or two. So Tom has dyslexia, so I've always tried to, you know, recommend books and little bits and whatever to him and stuff and whatever. And it's not, he will read autobiographies, footballers and sports. He's always wanted to do that. And if I tell you what, if anyone thinks I'm a sports stato, Tom is well better than I am. He could tell you the numbers on any shirt of any team in like the top leagues in Europe, and I know there that shouldn't really take that much, but he, especially, it's funnier because with him being dyslexic, he can pronounce all the, you know, like let's say the Polish players' names, German, the play, we're talking 8, 10, 12 letters sometimes, and he knows them because he listens. Yeah. So he can't read it, and he won't be able. There are simple, I'd say simple words, but what I'm saying is that, you know, people who don't have dyslexia, it you know, they take for granted they would just be able to type, but, you know, things very quickly or notice. He'll recognise it because he's familiarised himself with things. So recommending books and things to him was a waste of time in that way, because he'd just say, I'm not going to read it. And that's where his impatience grew. So then when he tries to do anything, which he's going to, as I say, he is going to take over the podcast anyway, because he wants to do it. A lot of his mates are musicians. It was just on the cusp of being signed and stuff. So that's a really exciting time for not only him and his mates and stuff, but, you know, the fact that we've been, you know, he's followed, he went to school with one of the, with the singer in the band. They're called Rainmaker, and that's it, R-E-I-G-N. Yeah. And I went to see them for the first time just before Christmas, and it was absolutely amazing. And again, you think, it's the same with what I was thinking, you know, 20-odd years ago, when I'm thinking, I'm looking at comedians and going, I don't know who they are, they can't be any good. If I look at a band or, you know, a gig, I've never heard of them, so they can't be that good, can they? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you go and see these people, and that's the point. That's what irks me with celebrity and stuff now, is the fact that it's the same people as if they all live in a big village, like an Olympic village, and there's like 50 different celebrities who just, they're on the telly all the time. You know, the same people get presenting shows and stuff. And like, I've never wanted to be famous for one second. It absolutely frightens me. I don't want people knowing who I am, to be honest with you. And I don't think they want to know who I am either, so it worked quite well. And this is why I do certain things just for my own, like, enjoyment and entertainment. And I think interviewing those people on the podcast, I find a privilege, because I want an insight into how people's psyches are, because there's luck and there's, you know, and there's design. People can be, you know, your Andy Warhols, as in 15 minutes of fame and stuff. You can have that. But there's this, you know, it's satiated, isn't it, with regards to people who have longevity. I mean, we were speaking just before we started the episode about, and I mentioned Hugh Laurie, because you know, we're mentioning the word polymath, and he is like Stephen Fry said, he's one of the most annoyingly talented people ever, because he can act, he can play music, he's funny, obviously accents and things, and he's a really intelligent guy and whatever. And I know they were like, you know, I think they're from Oxbridge, aren't they? They were in the Cambridge Footlights, I think. And I get that you're in that, you know, you're in that sort of circle of friends and intelligence and stuff like that. But Hugh Laurie is someone I really respect as well, because he's, you know, it's the same with Stephen Fry, for example. He knows everything. And it's not that it's an annoying thing that he knows everything. He's genuinely an educational person. You could learn every time you hear him speak something new. And that's always what I don't want to educate anyone myself. The only person I want to inspire is my son, and maybe, you know, my nephew and niece when they get older and stuff. But all I want to do is just sort of, money doesn't really interest me at all. Money and fame are nothing to me. You know, if you have it, I just want to be comfortable. That's all I want. It's, you know, if I can, it's not that I don't want to inspire people. I mean, that's not my aim. Why would people listen to me? But I think the thing is that if you can have some sort of, you know, reputation of trying to help people do things. And that's why my point is that they shouldn't be listening to me. They should be listening to the people who I'm interviewing. You know, I've been lucky and fortunate to interview some of the most famous people in the world doing my normal job as a journalist, and you know, Pitt, DiCaprio, you know, Gervais is my favourite. Like the that's, and he took, you know, usually these are only 10, 15 minute interviews, but 2010 spoke to Ricky Gervais, 10 or 11. It was in like October. And I'd finished like after 18 minutes of questions. And he's like, haven't you got anything you want to ask me? Let's just have a chat. And then like it's about I do know this. It was a 48 minute conversation. Nearly as long as my answers on this. But yeah, but that was the thing, is that, you know, you've got people who are decent. And there are people who don't like him, and I get it, but he plays a character. His comedy is as a character. Yeah. And the thing is that he loves animals, so he's very forthright, you know, on his social media pages and things. But people think he's arrogant because he always goes on about, oh, I've got this money. But he does it on purpose, because that's the way he likes. He knows it annoys people, so he does it more. But the people, it's like, who get him, understand?
It's like when he did the MTV Music Awards, like a lot of people said, oh, I didn't like his like English humour and all that, and I don't like him. You go, well, that wasn't him. He came on and said, right, I'm going to do this. Do you know what I mean?
That's it. And the Golden Globes are the greatest. I mean, and the thing is as well, is that the people who were there, and did he do it 5 times? So that's how much actors, actresses, everyone, you know, directors, the amount of times he takes the mick out of Scorsese and De Niro and Joe Pesci. And that's the thing. You look at the, you know, they're just like, you know, laughing because they know it's like, you know, they have comedy roasts in America. That's the tip of the iceberg. You know, you're going back to like sort of the 70s and stuff, and you had, and I've completely forgot his name now, Don Rickles, who does the voice of Mr. Potato Head in Toy Story. I think it actually is him. I might be wrong there, but he definitely does a voice. And he was one of the first, you know, sort of people to not like, you know, if he does do Mr. Potato Head, but yeah, it's one of the first, you know, sort of edgy comics, if you like. Yes. And you sort of go from there. And then, you know, that's the evolution. And that's just in comedy. You know, you look at football and you've got players like George Best in the, you know, mid to late 60s, early 70s and stuff. And then people say, oh, Paul Gascoigne's, you know, gone the same way as Best. This is the evolution. And I'm usually in entertainment circles or anything like that, because football is entertainment at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's cyclical. So everyone will take inspiration from pioneers, if you like, but also, you've now got new different types of music. You know, football's become a massive organisation and a business, or, you know, there are organisations within the business and such. You know, people will always harp back, you know, through film, TV entertainment and such, and will say, you know, I loved, you know, certain, you know, directors and actors and things like that. And then, unfortunately, you know, now, the worst thing is the bad stories that come out about people, you know, the likes of Hitchcock and stuff, and Polanski, and, you know, Wall of Sound, what was his name? The guy, basically, he was basically like a pioneer of a particular Phil Spector.
Oh, yeah, and Phil basically, Spector.
Yeah. And, you know, and then you find out that, like, these genuinely genius people in the field, that makes me think, I don't ever, like, call me any similar to that, because that, am I on the edge of, like, being crazy or something? I don't know. But I think I boil it down to, you know, wanting to use particular sort of part of your brain, if you like. That's the way I've always been fascinated with the human mind, and then always thinking, you know, for example, why do I want to do this, or why do I think about certain things? You know, there are people who I'd never even, like, I mean, about until about 10 years ago, I'd never even heard of Franz Kafka, Metamorphosis, and then you think, Then I'll then start reading Albert Camus as well, The Stranger, and book. I'm thinking, I didn't. That's what I mean. I didn't go to university, so I didn't do English degree or anything. So I wouldn't have done classics. I haven't done anything. The only time I was coming across these was probably watching University Challenge, and then I'll forget who the person is because I've gone on to the next question, and
You
then
know,
it's only.
it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that there's a curiosity about the big questions in life, and often I lose focus because me immediacy, be curious about your surroundings. But sometimes I get curious about the bigger questions, and people say that I'm not present in that moment because I'm thinking about those bigger questions. And if I see someone reading a book, or like I hear someone's accent, I go, "Where are you from?" Or, "Oh, what's that book? What's it like?" And no one else in the place asks those questions. And I'm thinking,
It's because you
like,
don't want to interrupt people reading the book, Tim. I'm only messing.
that's true. But like, I think there's definitely an inquisitiveness to or that kind of motivation to understand the human condition that shines through in the Mersey Talk podcast. And also, I'd like to think North and South. I think that my son, since I've had my son 2.5 years ago, one of the inspirations for this was, A, in 10 years, will I be happy with my life if I haven't done certain things? Wrote a list, right? I need to do these now because I'm 42 or whatever. No, my son will be growing up and seeing that. And I think that you've just said there, like Mersey Talk, you're hoping to pass it on to him because he can take it in his own way. But there's a curiosity there in that you're speaking to people. I'd heard of some of the people you'd spoken to, but not all of them. So it was tremendous to see those insights into how they approach things. And that was powerful as well. And again, as you say, you were letting them speak. So the most recent one was with the young girl, the singer. And it
Camilla
was,
Connolly,
I think it was your longest one, wasn't it? 90 minutes. And I listened to every minute of it. I thought it was fantastic. But I just think it's great to say, like, is someone here I'm going to speak to? Let's have a deep dive into what they're all about. Let's do the kind of thing that you might not even know about the people who you live with because you're living within these like social expectations all the time. It's a podcast where we have a deep look at something and we let that person speak, throw a few points in over the top, and then hopefully someone else gets something out of it. But again, it's not something that you wish to quantify. It's something that you wish to do because it develops the human experience for others. You know what I mean? And
Absolutely agree.
I was going to ask you, like, what's your philosophy on the podcast? I think you've already answered that. I was going to say, how did it come to pass? I think you've already answered that. Now, when I was
Well,
settling
just
north,
on that,
go
I was just going to say on that, it was supposed to be people in the Merseyside area or something who had something to do with it, because obviously Clive Tilsley, people say, well, he's not from Liverpool,
Yeah.
but yeah, obviously people like of our age, and obviously older than us, he was Radio City commentator, and that's basically where he got his first gig to do that, and then became was working Match of the Day and stuff, and ITV, and obviously Premier League World and stuff like that, and obviously Amazon Prime and bits and stuff, and I think the thing was then there, I thought I just wanted to establish it. It's not that I'm not no longer interested in people from the Merseyside area, but I wanted to establish it to also make people remember there's not just the famous footballers, for example. There are or even some of the famous boxers that the likes of for example, in recent times, Bellew, the Smiths, and things like that. And that's the thing, is that there are people who are almost bubbling under the surface
Yeah.
who have eaten far more interesting stories, I believe, to tell. And they've lived such, amazingly versatile lives, because the road to, even if you get to the top, it's never in a straight line. There are
Yeah.
people who, I mean, how many, like, I don't know, right, so, I mean, I'm unfortunate, I'm a believer in, and this is, just my personal opinion, but I'm a believer that if you've got a billionaire status, there's not a chance that you've got that simply by being a nice person all the way. And that's why I think that the people who aren't hugely successful in life have got far more to teach. Because if they're all geared towards, getting to the first million, the first billion, and Not many people are interested in that, I don't think, anymore. You can see the state of the world now. And the thing, with the 1%, is we've seen this over, COVID times, haven't we? Where, the billionaires have what, quadrupled, and even, some even tenfold of, their wealth. And that, how does that help? Little Johnny down the street, whose, parents may not be, in something, you might not even be working, and then maybe does that make them think, well, there's absolutely no hope for me in life, and it shouldn't be like that at all. You shouldn't need to have exposure through any sort of wealth, finance, or anything. And the longer that these things go on with all, for example, right-wing governments and stuff, deprivation's only going to get worse and worse. And you won't have your boxes coming out sometimes, because you never want to get to a situation where, you're in America, and there's a, and they call it, the American dream. And then people are shooting each other, 50,000, deaths a year and stuff. You don't want to get to that stage where people are thinking, well, if I'm not going to be a boxer or an NFL player, a basketball player, or if I don't go into hip hop or whatever that is, that's it. Because I didn't go to Harvard or any of the five big, colleges or anything, what are you supposed to do? So then it's obvious that they turn to the streets, and it's, and that's the way that that culture is going to continue forever, until people realize that opportunities need to be given to everybody who's a human, regardless of whether you're a disabled person, a non-disabled person, whether you've got any form of impairment that can be, down as medicalized, if you like, which dyslexia is medicalized, ADHD, and we're going back 70, what, 80 years, aren't we, to 90 years, actually, if you think about it, the beginnings of the, the Third Reich and stuff, and eugenics was already put in place before that. By scientists, and they were British and American scientists at the turn of the century. And the fact is that how have we got over 120 years and eugenics is still a thing? So people, you're thinking that if someone's got some sort of what they, an impairment, that society deems them to be not normal. And I think that you've got now, look at, so many people who, would never have been on television. For example, you've got like the CBeebies presenter, whose name escapes me,
Yeah, I know that. She's got one arm, hasn't she?
and I think, and the thing as well, there's a oh, it's the comedian who used to be, she was in,
Oh,
Grange
yeah, she was
Hill.
on Mock the Week and
Yes, absolutely. And there's Rosie Jones. That's not the one I was talking about, but Rosie Jones as well. They both got MS. And the fact is that, you've got the Last Leg on Channel 4, and these, diversity is what the world should be proud of. And
I
that's
think,
what I think.
yeah, I think that like part of the philosophy of Mercy Talk, I'd like to think North and South as well, is about that kind of like, let's look at the world and let's look at how we can make it a bit better. And I think what's most unfortunate is this polarization in the political realm, whereby, particularly over the last 7 years, we've seen in the leading democracies, in inverted commas, you've got the whole Trump impact in the States. You've got the Fox News thing the last 20 years. A right-wing attempted coup in government. Here, we've seen, particularly over the last 2 years, but since Brexit or just before, a real move towards the culture war. And it's almost like things like the Equalities Act, human rights, respect for disabilities, respect for minorities. It's almost like, oh no, you can't even talk about that anymore without being accused of being woke, or I don't even know what that bloody word means. And I don't know if you saw that caller who James O'Brien was
Means being
speaking
a
to.
nice person, woke. It means being
Being
basically,
aware,
a
I thought
decent
woke means to
person.
be aware, but it's used by a label, not just by people who are necessarily on the right now. This woke stuff, it's gone too far and all this. Now, people think, oh yeah, people with disabilities, like, oh yeah, everyone's treated equally now. No, look at the statistics. the average person who's got a disability, do people like go out the way to like say hi, you're okay? Oh no, they're too busy, they're running around themselves, and oh, I'd rather not speak to that person or whatever. So there's still huge issues there. And what's happened is politics has now come about, like identity politics. And again, this is thrown about by the right, as the left say, oh, people identify as black or woman or, you know, transgender and all this. That's identity politics. You think, well, it is to a degree, but also on the other side, you have these people who say, oh, you know, I'm a white man and no one does anything for me anymore. And, you know, I'm British and proud. Why am I so suppressed and oppressed and all this? And it doesn't matter what the facts say and what the truth are. It's about how those people feel. And that's becoming like the dominant narrative. And I think it is unfortunate. And I think that's why it's important that like grassroots media and grassroots people talk about these things and get like those kinds of messages out there. You know what I mean? I think that's important. I want to do podcasts about people, how they survive financially. You know, we've got bills going up through the roof, cost of living, etc. I have something to say about that, because you put TV on and you talk about it on the news and show the energy bills are going up by 40%. You don't say, how are people going to survive? Like, literally, what's going on? How do people survive? What alternatives have we got? You don't hear about those issues. And they're becoming front and centre. And I think that, you know, one of the unfortunate things about grassroots media is a lot of it's being bought up by, like, conspiracy theorists and, you know, Gordon Bennett-type journalism. And I've heard people like... I've heard someone in Kirby once talking about how Donald Trump was our saviour and he's going to save the world from, like, paedophiles who are, like, lizards from space. Someone in Kirby, in Liverpool. And I thought,
there's a podcast called The Coming Storm that's absolutely brilliant on BBC Sounds.
Yeah. I haven't listened to it, but I'm aware of it, like,
yeah.
But that message gets out there. And I think that's what's unfortunate about, you know, you have people like Jürgen Habermas, who wrote like a few decades ago, oh, the internet and communications can democratize society and get more information out there. And in fact, it's just being sold to the highest bidder. And unfortunately, there's these like echo chambers now and these bubbles where people don't hear alternative information to that dominant narrative. And they don't care to. And they don't care what the facts are. It's become about this like identity that you just live in, and that defines you. You know what I mean? And it's absurd. It's absurd. Just on technology. Thank you very much for the help you gave me with North and South, because I said, Paul, I want to set up a podcast, and you said download Audio Boom, which you did. Have you got an account on Spotify? Now, we're not going to go all Rogan over Spotify, but let's just let's just say Spotify is one of the big platforms out there. So you said, if you had an account on Spotify, I said, yeah. He said, well, you can use Spotify, you need Audio Boom, and then you need to download Audacity, where you do the recording and all the editing. And it was complicated, and your help was very, very, very important. And it is quite hard to get your head around it at first. Did you figure that stuff out for yourself, or were you introduced to that through other people, or... You know, did you just do your research? Did you have someone else do it for you? How did you get down that rabbit hole of setting up a podcast, as it were?
Well, I'd say the first time I ever come into contact with any audio, and I mean professional audio editing or recording or anything like that, was about 2006 when I did my... I had almost an ongoing internship at Radio Merseyside. It was a programme in 1986 that was started up by Ray Stubbs, who you probably know, obviously, from Merseyside area. And it was basically a programme to cover all of the 13 leagues around Wirral, Liverpool, Merseyside area, up to Southport and stuff, Sunday league football. And people... You know, I've always dismissed, you know, pub football, as they call it, as, you know, just basically kicking lump and whatever. It's quite ironic that you had a team winning the FA Cup in 1998 who played what they would call pub football in Wimbledon. So that, how, you know, that's sort of used, you know, as a negative term.
88. Just so no one messaged me, it was 1988, wasn't it? Not 98.
Why did I say 98? Did I?
Yeah, yeah. There's a question. Who won it in 98? The FA Cup was it?
98. Chelsea against Middlesbrough, I think.
I think that was 97.
No, going off on a tangent. It was. You're absolutely right. 98 was Arsenal beating Newcastle, and then the year after, United beat Newcastle. They got beat 2 years on the bounce.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And then who won it in 2000? Just going off
on
a tangent. We're going to stop after
Chelsea beat Villa. I think Chelsea beat Villa 2-0.
Yeah. Well,
Di Matteo scored after about 48 seconds, which was the quickest goal until Luis Saha. Ironically,
that was 97, you know, Di Matteo was against it? Middlesbrough. But Chelsea did.
Yes. See, not a very good stat, though, am I?
Yeah, we've just gone off on a complete tangent, sorry. So
it was Villa, but yeah, it was the wrong game. I know there was a goal from close in. But yeah, so Derek Jones basically was the... He's still at Merseyside now, mainly covering Tranmere Rovers. But he introduced me to the world of broadcast, basically, and I went to a Tranmere game with him. It was only a pre-season friendly, and then I went to an October game, and then around that time, I think as well, I actually got I think it was like 2007. Actually, I got a complimentary ticket as well from Everton, you know, just to go and. You know, because I said I wanted to get into journalism. Now we're talking, I was like 27, 28 at that time. You think that's quite a, you know, a late time to get involved. But in Merseyside, it was Derek Jones who was employed there, but also, and still is, Jerry Hale. Absolutely unbelievable guy. Honestly, Google Jerry Hale from Liverpool. He was actually one of the premium extras, if you like, in Coronation Street. So he didn't have he had a non-speaking part, but he would always be in, like, the Rovers having a pint or something. Maybe he just wandered in and then they just couldn't get rid of him. Lovely, lovely guy, honestly. Absolute font of knowledge for football and stuff. Sunday League, he basically would say to me, oh, you know, we're going, just have a look at the Echo, you know, the week before. See whoever the big fixtures are, you know, with regards to... Either a Sunday League side who's, I don't know, maybe struggling and they're trying to get back to, you know, the heights that they'd achieved previously in years gone by and stuff. And then you've got a younger side to, coming steadily through different leagues. So you used to go right across to as far as Ellesmere Port in the Whittle, which is as far as you can go that way for what we covered. And then, right up to Southport, McGall, Ormskirk and District Leagues. And then, I mean, because you've got some of the best Sunday League sides who've won the FA Sunday Cup, which is the FA Amateur Cup, basically, if you like, of a Sunday. So being away with Oyster Martyrs, they were called, ran from the Lobster Pub in Croxteth. That's Wayne Rooney's uncle, Richie. His brother Graham was playing for them. His cousin Thomas was there as well. And then, it's absolutely ridiculous. Went to Anfield twice with them. They lost one and won the other. I think they got beat by Camden Conservative. And then they beat another side from the North East as well. Like the year later or 2 years later. We've had some unbelievable sides. And that's what made me think. Again, as I was saying, you know, the more you look into things, you know, when I was young, those comedians, I don't know them, they can't be good. Sunday League football, you know, is always like, you know, it's like a derogatory thing for, you know, like sort of B, C standard football, you know, in the professional game. But a lot of those players who actually get paid to play, League of Wales, you know, anywhere where they can play and they, you know, where they can legally, you know, sort of, you know, regards the rules, the FA's rules and stuff, and the Welsh FA's rules, where they can play, and they can then play of a Sunday for that side, and then they're working through the week. And the fact is that, as I say, there's an absolutely fantastic Sunday League podcast as well. Another one which escapes my name, and there's a great. Just one sec, I'm just getting it now. It's ran by a straight from the off It's run by a really good fella called Michael Watson, and basically he spoke to Carrigan and people as well. You know what I mean? So you've got the people that who were well known throughout the game and through, you know, from the area, but you've also got you know, Sunday League players who've been taken on by sides that, for example, have played over Saturday, the likes of, you know, right across the northwest, you know, through Manchester, Bearscow, Union with far up as Morecambe, Fleetwood, have even got even further up. I think they got Gary Fletcher Taylor on, who was at Blackpool, who played in the Prem. And you look at those, you know, those people who are, you know, you look at Ian Wright, by the way. When you go back, he made it into, just like Vardy, came into football at the age of 24. Professional football at 24 and ended up playing for England. And Vardy done exactly the same. Ian Wright played for Dulwich Hamlet. And I've mentioned that in my book as well, that South, because it's obviously centred on a player who plays for Southport and then ends up going to the Prem and goes and plays in the Bundesliga. But Dulwich Hamlet's, Southport's record attendance, it was against Dulwich Hamlet all the other way round, that Dulwich. And it always made me think, is that there, you know, there are people throughout life who do things and are really good at what they do. And sometimes it's down to lack of opportunity or luck or whatever. And as I say, when I started at Merseyside, I realised how good those people were. And it always made me think, just how good are the people who are better than them? Because these people I'm admiring now are so good at what they do, and it's their normal job. So Derek and Jerry were unbelievable. And then, like, guy who's a still really, like, good friend of mine, Carl Woodward. So 2012, I went to Radio City, and I was doing, like, the Twitter handle and stuff and doing the, you know, text play-by-play commentary for, like, on there. But then I started getting more involved with stuff in the other podcasts. I was on the Blue Room, which is the Everton side. And then I really learned a lot from Carl because he was the producer there, and he's at Merseyside now, and he's now started presenting as well on Merseyside. So the evolution of him going from, you know, being a producer, and, you know, we'd be like, to be like me, and they used to let Tom come in when he was dead young in the tower, and they'd say, oh, I don't know whether it's you know, maybe just like it's all right if he comes today and whatever, if, you know, the first time he was there. And then he realised, and I didn't teach him any of this. He just wanted to learn. Like, one of the lads, Dave Darney, you might know as well.
Oh, Dave Darney.
Yeah. He put, like, CBeebies or something like that, you know, on the computer to sort of keep him quiet. 10 minutes later, Tom had had, like, the football results and stuff on, and he was saying, oh, by the way, like, Tottenham have scored. And then they bolted through to the commentator, so Alan Irwin, who was at the Everton games, or Steve Hollisall, who was at Liverpool. And it was like, oh, yeah, he's not actually... It's like he was working, you know what I mean? Like he was part of the team. And that was so funny, because they were like just expecting him, oh, just be quiet, or I don't know if he's going to mess around. And I think that's what it was, you see. It's that he's always wanted to, you know, he's just been interested in stuff, because he loves Formula One. I mean, I used to watch... You know, we're talking Mansell, you know, Damon Hill, Coulthard, Button and all that, and, you know, late 90s, and then I've always loved Everton cricket. Obviously, that's how, you know, we hadn't spoke to each other for a while, have we? Because we just got obviously gone on different, you know, paths in life and stuff, haven't we? And then turned out that where my girlfriend was living, you know, was around the corner from your old school, wasn't it, where you taught? And then we started playing, or you invited me down to play cricket with the Smart Lads and all that. And it's one of those things, isn't it, where some things, you know, are just meant to happen in life, I think. And say, going there, they're the types of people who I would, you know, recommend. If anyone wants to, even if they want to make it big, if you like, you need to start off ground levels and do things for free, voluntary and all that. And so that's where I learned to do it. I was told to use Audacity. It's a professional, you know, editing tool and all that type of stuff. So.
Yeah, you do have to put a few hours into getting your head around the equipment. But again, what we said earlier is anyone can go, oh, that looks interesting. And then all of a sudden, after a while, when you scratch the surface, it's like, wait there, I need to sit and edit this for hours. And I need to go through this. And I need to do my research before that podcast. And like making a podcast can take a whole day. I mean, Blind Boy, I don't know if you've listened to the Blind Boy podcast. He's brilliant. And he always says
I have,
support
yeah.
independent podcasts as much as possible. And,
Yeah.
you know, he talks about a host of things, doesn't he? Cultural, mental health,
Yeah.
all that. But he says, like, support independent podcasts because these people are genuinely, if you do that, they can do it. I mean, my ultimate aim is to try and spend a day a week on it sustainably because people want it, ultimately, you know what I mean? And, you know, take it from there, have a family of podcasts. But there's such a desire for it. I know podcasting, he said, oh, it's going to get to a point where, like, oh, no, you can't have any more and it's going to die a bit of a death. It just ticks so many boxes, podcasting. That do you reckon it's going to stay strong well into the future? I mean, I they're a big part of every day for me. And I only got into them about 2.5 years ago. I listened to a podcast and that was it. Then I was away. Like, it's a very powerful thing. But also for grassroots and for slightly alternative ways of looking at things, it is good. Because there are some great podcasts out there, like big podcasts and famous podcasts. But I don't know if you've ever listened to them polished ones that are, you know, they have like a celebrity on and all that, and it often lacks a lot of authenticity. Do you know what I mean? And as you said, you know, from the ground up, there's a lot of very, very good people, a lot of very, very interesting people, and a lot of very important messages which we could get out there. You've touched on your journalism. Many people have this romantic idea that journalism, like, you know, oh yeah, let's go out there and discover like Watergate. And, you know, I'm going to be on the phone speaking to people and making hundreds of thousands of pounds a month and all that. Now, you've experienced this. You also work for Everton. We're both Everton fans, and I haven't really made that clear yet because one of my mates said, he was a Red, don't be having a go at Liverpool or I won't be subscribing to your podcast. So I've already alienated all the people who don't like certain types of podcasts to do, like, oh, I'm not into the world. I've already had right-wingers turn off because it's me. Like, loads of people listen to me podcast, and I don't want the Reds going, oh, I'm finished with him. But you work for Everton, and you've been a journalist, and what's the reality? You've talked about voluntary work, work from the ground up, learning the ropes, as it were. What's your experiences of the world of journalism for the average journalist and your experiences?
Do you want me honest for you or not?
I want you honest for you.
Basically, well, it's you know, I would say that maybe if I was to say that I can't be that against it because I've been doing it for 24 years. So, but you find your own niche, I think, and you find your own, not so much voice because this, you know, the stuff that I've done, I'd like to think that a lot of my stuff is promotional. Not one piece that I've ever written, person that I've ever interviewed or anything, is in the way that someone would say, is a typical journalist. Because a lot of people have got... See, there are people that are, you know, your tabloids and stuff and the, you know, the gutter press, as people like to call it, and you know, and the thing is, the sensationalism of it it gives journalism the bad name. And I've never written I've never been in a position to write anything bad about anyone. Yeah. I've never, and I don't see the point either. Now, people who read my tweets might think very different about that because I am very outspoken, but that's what I believe. Or what is on my mind. And that's supposedly what people like Toby Young say is free speech. Now, I don't agree with his thoughts, but there's a difference between... I believe in free speech, but the people who have hijacked free speech, meaning that they can say anything they want and it's usually offensive or it's derogatory or whatever, or it's a negative thing. That's what I don't like. Yeah. And there's a lot of journalism that can be like that. You know, I always, you know, go back to the Steve Coogan interview on Newsnight with the News of the World journalist who said, this is what people want to read about. And he's like, well, hang on. And this is what I've always believed as well. If journalists who write things like that, and you Jan Moyers and all these people, if anyone was to write anything about them or stand or photographers outside their house, would they believe that that was the right way forward and that you know that it's fine, you know, that the boot's on the other foot? Absolutely not. They wouldn't. That it's social commentators who have no place in this world. They really don't. And the only reason that they are, you know, sort of tolerated, if you like, is because people will say, I don't read the Daily Mail or anything. Oh, but I love going on there and looking at the fashion. And I'll just read the comments. Basically, what you're doing is giving them clicks and hits so they can just keep on getting advertising revenue. And the fact that, so you're as culpable as the people who are writing it.
Yeah.
So it isn't just those people. Yeah. I am, and I hate being pigeonholed or tarred with that brush. I've never written a negative story in my life. I don't believe in it. I don't, all my stuff is promotional for, you know, admittedly for celebrities and people like that, but it's only ever to promote music, film, comedy, whatever, you know, industry they're in or whatever like that. Been very fortunate to speak to people, some of them, as I say, the most famous people, you know, ever. I can't believe that I've been able to do that. I mean, it's almost as if, like, I've hoodwinked them, you know what I mean? Yeah. Of being able to even have 10 minutes at a time, 10 seconds of speaking to Brad Pitt or DiCaprio. It's just like, you know, so I'm incredibly fortunate to have been able to have done that. But, you know, it's not like I'm having a chat show and I'm speaking to these people, you know, sort of, and it's going broadcast. It's not. The fact is that, yeah, my name's on a byline and then the story goes. But I think the situations that I've personally experienced in my life, you know, maybe some were, you know, I didn't continue with them on because maybe it was something to do with me. Maybe it was my mindset at the time. Maybe I didn't know what I wanted. Maybe I got in too deep of something that, you know, where I thought it's a really good fit and it wasn't. And for example, after I was at Everton, that really set me back and knocked me confidence because I, it didn't go out as I thought it would. Because I remember the phone call when I was I was asked to do the job. So as you said, we were talking beforehand. So I was doing freelance work and I was doing, I was working as a team that was part of, that won the contract from Trinity Mirror. And I still feel bad about that this day because they were really good. The likes of Prenner, who's now gone on to be head of comms at Everton, really good people who were writing for that stuff. And then you're thinking you're sort of taking food, you know, out of their family's mouth and stuff and whatever. And I know there was a little bit of, you know, whatever that happened with that. Not personally to me or anything, but I respect these people. And it wasn't, you know, I was the main freelancer who was part of that, the contributor. So it was, you know, getting more and more, you know, I was able to go up to Finch Farm and, like, first interview I'd done there was with Phil Neville, I think. And then, like a week later, it was with Baines. If anyone wants to, this was around the Jolie and Lescott time as well, when they got beat 6-1. And that was my first game at Goodison was for the Arsenal game when we lost 6-1. And people were blaming me, saying, you know, in the press, what I mean, in the press box. And then they were saying, there's a space on the Everton website of the digital team. Do you want to actually be employed by the club? And that happened just before Everton beat Wigan. It was Leighton Baines' debut. Ironically, he'd signed from Wigan. Scored a pen quite late on when we won on his debut. And it was after that they said, we'll have to interview you for it, but, you know, that'll be the role, digital media journalist. And then I was thinking, oh, my God, that'd be amazing, of course. And it turns out I got it. And I remember, I can tell you the whole phone call now. I was almost in tears when they told me, like the receptionist in the media team had called up. She's actually secretary, actually, the head of communication PA. And she rang me up and she was like, oh, my God, I'm so happy that you're happy. You know what I mean? And it's absolutely amazing. And then, it just didn't. I don't know whether it was me, but sometimes I felt out my depth. And then it really, I didn't go to an Everton match. I didn't go to Goodison for about 2 years after that.
Yeah.
Because it was almost like I didn't want to bump into the people who I've been working with. And maybe I gave them the wrong impression of who I was as well. I've always been a very individual person. And I think they thought maybe I wasn't a team player or something like that. But it wasn't it wasn't like that. I think it was just me, for example. I've never been a very confident person, and people might think, oh, you can't really say that when, you know, you're doing, you know, you're putting your neck on the line, you know, creating music and stuff and doing podcasts and interviewing people and all that type of stuff. But my point, you know, there is that it's just something that I want to do. If it resonates with someone else, then fine. But through journalism, I just think that I've just done what I thought I was half decent at, really.
Come what may. Do you know what, though? I think the part of the creative mind is an openness to emotions and
absolutely
a sensitivity to your surroundings, which can sometimes be a curse. And I think I see myself in those kind of comments. James O'Brien's most recent book, which is really good, and I'll put it in the links. And again, I don't want all the GB News crowd to stop following me, is How Not to Be Wrong, The Art of Changing Your Mind. And in it, he kind of explains the pressure to be a commercial success versus to be true to yourself, that pressure. And in many ways,
that is always
my entire life is about that pressure. To what extent do I want to be me and still be miserable being me, because that's how my mind is to an extent. That's a bit over the top, but you get what I mean.
No, I agree with you.
Do I pay those bills at all costs? And to what extent are those two married? To what extent do those, is there a Venn diagram there? And I think that's ultimately the big, big question. And those people who do make it, and again, you know, earlier, that free speech issue, we'll all agree with Voltaire's idea that there should be free speech. But we teach kids in schools, with free speech comes responsibility. And those people who are often the biggest free speech advocates, and again, I don't want people, I listen to Jordan Peterson, I don't want any Peterson fans deleting me. But he goes on about free speech in the universities, about this 0.9% who get cancelled if they get on the roster in the first place. The entire media biosphere and the entire media ecosystems in this country, you know, as an example, is, we know what it's like. It's contaminated with nonsense, with a conservative narrative of division, of lowest common denominator politics. And for even like a moderately progressive voice to get out there is very, 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 very difficult. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that West Wing advert episode where the lady with hearing difficulties says, we talk about the media, but more people buy the media when there's like nonsense in the media papers and distraction and celebrity and all this nonsense. And to many, in many ways, the media and the governments that we have reflect us, but that's not to say that we should accept that. We need to say, wait there, there's higher standards here of truth, of justice. Even the concept of democracy seems to be on the wane in recent years. I mean, we'll see how that all pans out. But I think that you've summarised beautifully there that kind of battle for the journalist and also for the soul of the creative, as it were. Just with one eye on time, Paul, I did want to speak to you about your music. I'm going to put some links up to your music. I've listened to your
Thank you.
This is another avenue of your creative spark, etc. And I know you've been making music for years. I was out with you once in this dance track. Come on, me and you both like electronic music plus so many other types of music. And I remember there was a beat and you went, this is, and named the tune. Do you remember we were out?
It was in Southport.
And I was listening going, and anyway, it then kicked in and I went, whoa, you recognise that literally from the sound of the drum before anything else had come in. So we both like electronic music. Like I listen to all kinds of music. It isn't as big for me since podcasting took off music as it was. But music's a big part of my life. It's the language of the soul, if you like. I'm sure you'd agree. But you make music. Now, I know you do it on SoundCloud. And you obviously have got that need, the cathartic need to create music. I've got that in me, but I've never really been able to express it. What advice would you give to people who want to get into music using technology, and how would you describe the music you make?
So I suppose the music that I make at the moment, because I'm trying to evolve, and the music I've always tried to make is electronic, because I can't play an instrument. I can play the drums and I can very, very loosely play keys, but other than that, it's electronic because there are so many different ways and it's accessible for me. So I've found, and are you actually, I'm using Ableton at the moment to actually construct and produce. So it's what's it called? It's a it's a D. I should know this, like, but
But it's Ableton, a
DAW.
website. If you Google Ableton, will you find the
No, it's a piece of software. You can Google it, yeah, and you go on there and you download the software. But it's a DAW, digital audio workstation. Now there are many different ones. I'm also going to start using Logic, which is another one. But these, you Google that, and you go and you see how many famous, ultra famous, mainstream artists now use that. It's ultra professional. They are, they're the ones that people, and the FL as well, which used to be called Fruity Loops. That's what FL stands for. Fruity Loops, that's what it, that's the like the company or it's the piece of software that going back to like Amiga times, but that's just evolved. And I think what all I'm trying to do, I've loved that much. If you look at, I mean, I've got over 10,000 like songs on Spotify, as in of my own, personal collection of artists that I like and songs that I like. So there's, and the, you're talking anything from, 90s Britpop down to John Cale, in the 60s, very experimental artist. And Aphex Twin is one of my real heroes. He's his own genre. So you've got a lot of people like Squarepusher and Ortega, Venetian Snares, and people like that who've come out of, sort of Aphex Twin around that time, creating the electronic alternative or, electronic music. But where did that come from before? Obviously Kraftwerk, and as I say before that, John Cale, 70s band called Can, CAN as well. And you look at those influences. And I've always listened. So I started using PlayStation 1, I think it was. Music 2000. There was that was a game. So, a disc, you put it in, and basically it was the it's exactly like you've got now on the digital audio workstation as it is. And Ableton is just layers. So you will have any sound you want. There'll be a sound. And there'll be you can have a loop, you can have one shot, you can create things yourself, within a drum pattern, or you can create, any type of sound, like drones, if you like. So a drone would be something like, cinematic sci-fi. You could be Vangelis if you want to recreate Blade Runner soundtrack or anything like that. I love Mogwai, for example. They're a good, an instrument-based band, but they've done so. Mogwai yourself, yeah.
Yeah, I know,
They've
yeah.
so much. So, I think one thing I'd like to do, because I mean, I've been writing the screenplay for quite some time, and I could get Mogwai to do it. Apparently, one of my cousin's mate is really like close with them. He's like a, I don't know his official title, but he's a doctor. He's on like, oh, he's a real, up in Glasgow, and he's really good friends with them. So I wanted them to, do the soundtrack, because I want non, I don't mean nondescript, but soundtrack type stuff. And all I've done is listen to, basically, particular. I'd listen to, 70s funk or something, or not very famous or well-known tracks, and I'm listening and thinking, well, this is how hip-hop started. Basically listening to, like, there's a Minnie Riperton song called Inside My Love, right? And I over the last like sort of 5 or 6 years, I've been like going out looking in what songs have been sampled. I haven't sampled anything yet. I haven't even got to that stage yet. All I've done is very recently subscribe to another website called Splice, which basically, you have all kinds of sample loops, as I say, one shots and things like that, and different sounds, basically vocals and things. They're all royalty free samples and things like that. And I don't use much of that. Also, the only thing I want is a vocal. Now, I've asked, you mentioned before, the last person I had on the podcast, which was in November, Camilla Connolly, unbelievable singer, and I want to. I've asked her if she would like to, collaborate, if I can make something that she would be happy to be a part of, because I want to try and, even just it like club music is very easy to make because it's obviously repetitive beats and loops and stuff like that. If an idiot like me can do it, then anyone can do it. It's basically just patience, playing around with things that you've got in front of you, experiment. And the fact is that nobody's under pressure to make music or to do anything or whatever. If you should only make ever what you like. That's why I would never try and make a mainstream, David Guetta-esque song, because I don't like music like that. So if there are people who will just go out and, oh, I want to make a, I want to get a top 10 song and I'll get loads of money and stuff, then that's fine. That's no problem. But, yourself and I, Tim, like quite similar music, don't we? Like progressive, digweed and stuff and whatever. And I grew up in the 2000s and stuff, listening to a lot of, global underground. So there were DJs I'd never heard of. There were songs I'd never heard of before. I wasn't a big Ministry of Sound fan or whatever. Did go to Cream between, 97 and 2002, and loved that, obviously. And I'd take like a Derek Carter over to Pete Tong. So Derek Carter, Chicago House, and I'm more like a funky-ish soul type of stuff, but that's not what my music is though at the moment. I've done more electronic stuff where it is a bit, it's more industrial. And I think that anyone like Audible and Logic offer 90-day trials free. Just go on there and just try it out. And if you look at YouTube, look at all the, there's so YouTube is great for a few things with regards to people will, there are so many helpful people out there who will put instructions for all kinds of different things. You want to better your golf swing, your music and stuff like that. That's what I, that's so if people are always, have always wanted to even just make one song, whereas I've already released an EP, two EPs and a single. So I've like nine songs altogether I've released. And I've got about 60 or 70 there that I'm playing around with, that I want to finish. But if someone just wants to do one and it takes them a month, so what? If they want to do one and that's an accomplishment for them, that's the way it should be. And I think now that there's so many accessible things, that people, as I say, there's no excuse. If you've got a laptop and it's decent, enough, you can download that free trial. That's 3 months worth. Play around with it. Kids, we're very technological now. Even like 10, 11 years of age, you could have the next Fatboy Slim on your hands, or a Calvin Harris, and you look like, what's that? About 2008, 9, 10, or whatever, when he first started out. His was more, sort of, it wasn't massively mainstream. And then he's been, he's had Rihanna and all the biggest, sort of female artists in the world and stuff. And now he's a multimillionaire. So it can be done. It can be done. It's called determination and patience, honestly. That'll be the
Excellent.
title of my album.
Paul, I think we're approaching 1 hour 20. I've lost track of time. I don't care, by the way, because this has
Sorry,
been a good
something's to me.
discussion. No, it's been brilliant. We're going to put links to your music on the podcast
Okay.
notes and links to those sites and
Thank
creative
you.
engines that you've just cited, but we will end it there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
This was initially meant to be about creativity, podcasts, journalism and music, but it's been about so much more. So thanks very much for your time. Without you, I wouldn't be here now doing what I'm doing. So thanks very much.
So blame me, everyone.
Keep staying true to yourself. And everyone out there, thank you for listening to this episode. Paul, have a great Sunday. And everyone else, have a wonderful, wonderful next few days. Thank you very much.